Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to No Nonsense, the Tennessee Titans podcast. I'm your host, Matthias Wadner, along with my co-host, Will Lomas, as always. And we're here to recap the Titans' loss to the Cincinnati Bengals in their playoff rematch. They lost 20-16. They remain at, well, no, they get worse at 7-4 now, but they're still in control of the AFC South. And still in a good position to win the division, because the rest of the division is just terrible. But obviously not an ideal game for the Titans here. And it was kind of gross at times, just really slogging. Sorry, ESPN, the ESPN video adverts coming out to play as always. So sorry about that, guys. But yeah, just a really slow game. The offenses couldn't really get going. Second half, I thought the Bengals offense started to move the ball pretty well, but the Titans, as is always the case, the second half offense is just disgusting, and it was tough to watch at times. They still made it close because, you know, the defense made enough stops, but it's just, I don't know if it's disappointing because the Bengals are a good team, and like, it's not a shock that the Titans lose a game to this caliber of a team, but they just keep losing in the same ways, right?
I don't know. Like, real quick, I'm going to save everybody. I'm going to cut to my stop the nonsense for just a second. I've been overwhelmed. I was trying to update Twitter, and I've been overwhelmed by U.S. Soccer team GIFs. So you'll have to ask me the question again.
So my question was, by the way, we're recording this right after the U.S. just beat Iran, not Iran, Iran, in the World Cup and qualified for the knockout stages. So current events there. But my question was pretty much, aren't these, because I got into it a little bit with, I guess he's one of our listeners. If you're listening, shout out you. But he mentioned me on Twitter because I said sarcastically, like, oh, wow, Mike Vrabel, Coach of the Year. Am I right, national media members? And we're going to get into the whole Vrabel thing, I'm sure, at some point. But I just thought that was like a poorly coached game, and a lot of the same issues arised that have always been there for the entire season. And we did a little bit of back and forth, and he thought that a lot of these issues were new in terms of the run defense not being that great. I don't agree with that. Like, they gave up, what, 3.4 yards per carry? It's pretty good. Pretty good. I don't know. That's not that bad. But, I mean, the offense just, it's the same. Like, nothing has changed. Like, we thought maybe the Packers game kind of got the offense maybe back on track, but it's just back to the same thing of just having no consistency, no rhythm, and not being able to score in the second half of games.
Yeah, and you asked, you know, do they keep, like, it looks like they keep losing games in the same way. It's weird because when you watch, so, like, let's talk about the run defense just to touch on it for a second. So the run defense is weird because on paper they did a really good job, right? But the problem is it would be one good run stop, a tackle for loss, and then on third and 12, like, some crazy pass. I mean, I say crazy. It was just really well, really good ball placement to, like, T. Higgins or whoever that little dude is who made the only catch on Trey Avery all day. I think it was number 16. I can't remember his name. But, okay, so the run defense was good, but then that would happen, and then the run defense would immediately get caved in. And so it would be, like, five-yard gain, like, small pass, then another. It's just like they would string together two or three good plays, and then they would get gashed in a way that we're just not used to seeing them. So it's like the run defense as a whole was fine because, you know, the Bengals scored 20 points. Like, it's not like they were that they killed the Titans in any one category, but it just seems like they got outplayed. So that goes kind of back to your coaching question, which is, it all these losses kind of feel the same because we're excluding Buffalo because that was just kind of a freak game. But yeah, like,
it's not really only the losses because, I mean, they've only lost four games. It's not like this is happening consistently. It's the same type of issues that have been there the whole season. Like, the offense just can't score more than 16 to 24 points. I mean, they scored 27 against the Packers, but I mean, it's not that much. It's not like a crazy amount.
No, and, you know, a lot, like, there were similarities in this game to the Giants game. So it was, you know, there were explosive passes down the field. Like, there was, you know, the pass to Nick Westbrook-Ikhine was good. The Treylon Burks catch was awesome. Like, you know, Treylon looks good. Then there was the screen pass that went 74.9 yards, and then Treylon Burks got it in the end zone after Derrick Henry fumbled it. But, you know, so the explosive plays were there. But, man, it is just – the first and second down feel like wasted down so many times. And that's the whole, like, I tweeted about this when it happened, that the Todd Downing, the people that say, like, I'm not going to stick up for Todd, I'm not defending Todd Downing, but it's like, that crowd sucks. Like, you have to be more self-aware than that. Like, I understand that everything is not on Todd Downing. And, you know, this is not going to be a pile on Todd Downing podcast because he's been bad for a year and a half now. We've already piled on him, and we're stuck with him until at least the end of the year. So no reason to beat that dead horse. But if you can't separate the fact that, you know, he does not make anything better, and it's not, you don't have to go out of your way to defend him to say that every single thing isn't his fault. That doesn't help anybody. That doesn't help the conversation. You know, propping up somebody, even in the smallest degree, who doesn't do anything to help the football team and who makes them hard to watch, you know, it's a bad job. You know, it's there's good guys on both sides, or there's bad guys on both sides, or whatever the Trump quote was. Like, you know, it's just, it does not help further the conversation. So, having said that, like, the offense, for the most part, sucks. Like, you know, I know everybody says, well, they were running a bare front and they weren't getting any pushing in the middle. Like, okay, I understand that. But at the same time, your response to that, the only thing you have in your back pocket can't be, okay, well, we're going to go empty and Tannehill's just going to get the ball out really quick. Because everybody knows that's what's going to happen. And even if you're trying to run a deep concept, Daly is going to get blown up and destroyed because Hubbard or Hendrickson or whoever you're going against that week is just going to widen out and pin their ears back, and he can't take more than three steps without losing. So you have to have something else. The part that makes me so frustrated is the screen pass worked. You know, the problem is, and this is what Arthur Smith did so well, when something is working and you can do that over and over, make them stop you. Keep running screen passes. You know, don't don't try to get so cute and run that stupid, like, split back, like, jet sweep by Derrick Henry, but then it's actually a fake screen to the left and it's a real screen to the right. It's like, stop trying to get so cute. You don't have the time for it with this offensive line, and you don't have the skill position players if you're going to insist on putting Jeff Swaim and Cody Hollister and guys like that on the field. Now, if you had all your wide receivers and you wanted to do that, great. But the fact is that, you know, Treylon Burks, since he's come back, has, I believe he has, when he's on the field, he has a 20% market share of the targets. That's good. The problem is he should be on the field more, you know, and maybe some of that is pain management or whatever, but he doesn't look hurt. I mean, it's not like they're afraid to throw him the ball at all. Like, when he's on the field, like I just said, he gets 20% of the targets over the last 3 weeks. That's a pretty big market share. I don't know. I don't know why it's so hard to put your best players on the field. And again, the scripted drives was good. Like, I tweeted about it, and after that, my hands got too cold because I was at the game, and it was hard for me to tweet. But there was a good emphasis on getting the ball to Treylon Burks, getting it to Chigakonkwo, getting it to Austin Hooper, and getting it to Derrick Henry. Like, that's good. But the problem is there's just too many plays in between where there's, you know, a run that tries to go wide to the left, but you condense everything down. Swaim gets killed, and you end up in 2nd and 8, or worse, 2nd and 11. And it builds frustration, and it puts you in tough situations. And to sum that all up, yeah, it's kind of the same thing in that the offense just can't seem to find any sort of rhythm. And, you know, nobody wants to talk about it, and that's fine. But there were times when Derrick Henry got taken down on first contact yesterday, and that's always happened. He's always been a more physical runner, 5 yards past the line of scrimmage than 1 yard past the line of scrimmage. But there's times where he's just kind of not seeing holes develop in front of him, and he's not bending anything back when he's running his zone plays. I don't know. Like, he's fine. He's not hurt or anything like that, and he's not going to suddenly forget how to play. But there's a reason why he averages less than 2.5 yards or whatever it is over the last 3 weeks. Like, he's not hitting the hole very hard when it's there, and then half the times he runs, it's not there. So it's hard to put any blame on him. But yeah, I mean, they've got to figure out something to make him more comfortable, and they've got to figure out something to make the fact that Chigakonkwo and Treylon Burks are having incredibly explosive plays, you know, week after week, find a way to just say, okay, we're going to take 5 shots a game to those guys. And if they work, great. If they don't, they don't. But you need to make the defense fear that you're going to throw the deep ball when Chig and Treylon Burks are out there. And then if you do that, those are two pretty good size receiver / blocking type, you know, bigger bodies that can block for you, and you don't tip your hand all the time. And if they start to cheat, then you can run play action. But again, that won't happen because every fourth play they have to run something out of empty, or they have to run some poorly conceived trick play that's not really a trick play, or they have to do something where there's no easy sort of concept, like there's no easy sort of concept to get rid of the ball. And I don't know, it's frustrating, and it's going to happen again and again because that's just the way they're coached. But the short answer to your question is, yeah, it is the same loss over and over.
Yeah, Todd Downing sucks. I think that's like the main thing we could take away from this. It's the main thing we could take away from this whole season, because he's pretty much the biggest reason that the Titans aren't, what, 9-1? I don't even know at this point how many games they've played. But I really only think they should have lost the Bills game. I think they should have won the Giants game, the Chiefs game, and probably this game too, with a functioning offense. I think they would have. Granted, like, Malik Willis played for during the Chiefs game. But yeah, I mean, they should have won that game too. So it's just frustrating, man. It's frustrating. And I don't want to keep ragging on Todd Downing, because we do the same thing every podcast, but it keeps being the same issues, you know? And now we've gotten to the point where the running game is disgusting, dude. Like, I don't know. Like you said, some of it's Derrick Henry. I agree. I don't think he looks like himself. The run blocking is obviously horrendous. Like, I think there's one of the worst run blocking offensive lines that we've had in a while. They were okay for the most part for a good amount of this season. But these last 3 weeks, man, and these last 2 weeks against run defenses that have been bottom five to bottom seven in the league in terms of metrics. I know the Bengals got DJ Reader back, but 2.2 yards per carry and then 3.1 yards per carry against the Packers, who I don't know if you saw the Sunday night game against the Eagles. Miles Sanders looked like Barry Sanders out there against that defense, and the Titans couldn't get anything going on the ground against them a week before. So it's just frustrating, man. Do you think there's a way to fix the run game? Like, is it just like a Derrick Henry late season thing? Because I don't think it is. Like, we've gotten to the point where we're playing cold weather games, and the offensive line isn't helping, and Derrick Henry just doesn't look like the Derrick Henry of old. I don't know if you know, age is catching up to him, all the touches, or he's at this point just a complete product of his offensive line, which would be a severe issue because it's not a good offensive line.
Yeah, I think so. The problem is they're still good. Like, when you watch him, so like, I think the first play of the game was Raiden's pulled from the left side and kind of made this crease, and it was like a 9-yard run to start the game. And then there's other runs sprinkled in through there where Derrick Henry hits the hole hard, and he has such momentum carrying him forward that he kind of glides through those tackle attempts, and that's great. And that's what, again, when they played Kansas City, that's what he looked like then. And then when they played the Texans, that's what he looked like then. So I don't know how much of it is if Derrick Henry just fully commits, because there's obviously times where the offensive line isn't winning, but there's times where the offensive line has to hit, you know, their guys covered up at least moderately well. Like, they're not driving guys back, but, you know, you're not going to be able to do that every single time. And teams don't do that to the Titans very often, but they still get, you know, every now and then they'll get a string of good carries or whatever. Like, this run game can be functional, but at the end of the day, the problem is that, you know, let's say you're going to war, right? Like, if the enemy knows your plans, if they say, like, okay, this is what they're going to do, like, we know that, we can prepare for that, and then the other side just has the element of surprise, you're walking in with a disadvantage. And as long as Mike Vrabel is the head coach, you know that half of the plays are going to be runs. So if you just say, look, we're going to play a bare front, you know, a guy head up on the center and head up on both guards, and we're just going to assume that if we do this every single drive, that more often than not, they will start off with a run, and we can get them in second and 11, and then we can go from there. And when you're Mike Vrabel and you are so committed to running the ball to a fault that you can't say, okay, we need to change our personality for this game, and you can't move away from that, then, you know, it's on you. You get what you're going to get. So if they're insistent on, you know, it's December, it's the winter, not that it changes, but like, let's say that the winter months have something to do with it. And they say, well, part of our game plan is we want Derrick Henry to get 22 touches every game because it's really those last 10 that really wear on the defense. Okay. But if they don't, then you've basically you're forfeiting 10 or so plays a game where you're just going to get no yards because the other team knows you're going to run it. You're not doing anything special to be creative about it, and you don't have great talent on your offensive line. So you've got to assume that you're going to lose half of those carries, and they're probably all going to be in the first half. So if you're committed to say we can dig ourselves out of that kind of hole, well, first of all, you knock the ceiling of what this offense can be down, because like, you can't forfeit, you know, a fifth of your plays and be all you can be. So that's kind of where they are. And, you know, can the running game get back on track? Yeah, but the way to really do it is to just show teams that there's a world where you line up Derrick Henry in the backfield for two straight drives and you never hand him the ball. You go play action or you dump off screen passes or whatever, but you just can't be so predictable. It's what's gotten them killed in the playoffs the last 2 years. And we've talked about this before, and, you know, Tannehill takes the blame for it, but it's Derrick Henry and his 2.2 yards per carry that really kills the offense in the postseason because, again, when you commit a third of your touches, you know, maybe more, or a third of your snaps on offense, maybe more, to running the ball, and you can't get – you average 2.2 yards, you're going to lose that game. So that's the whole problem with this offense is let's say you ignore all of Downing's history, right? If you think that he's got a good offensive mind somewhere in there, it wouldn't even matter that much because he's already hamstrung by the fact that he's got to run it 50% of the time to stay out of the doghouse with Mike Vrabel. And we know that because we've seen them with Dontrell Hilliard and Deonta Foreman, and we saw them do that. You know, we saw them do that whether they had A.J. Brown and Julio. You know, we saw it regardless of who was on the field. And Vrabel has said it, that that's the identity of this team, and he said it in the offseason. He just said that that's how he thinks good football teams win games, despite the fact that that's not true when you look at the teams that win Super Bowls. So until they break that clear tendency, they're just always going to be in trouble with that. So I'm not really sure if they will do what they need to do to dig the running game out of this hole and to kind of make it not so obvious. But I can guarantee you in the playoffs, whoever they play is going to put eight guys in the box. They're going to line up in that bare front with three defensive tackles, and they're going to have that look in their system because that's what Denver did to them, and it crushed them, and it stopped any momentum Henry had, and every team who's dabbled in it has slowed the Titans down. So unless you can find ways to punish them by not running it with Derrick Henry every single time you have the ball, then you're just going to be in trouble.
People don't want to hear it because Derrick Henry is probably their favorite player. Yeah, I mean, he's my favorite player. Yeah, like, don't get me wrong, but you cannot win a Super Bowl in this league given how it's set up right now with a clear emphasis and an overemphasis on giving the ball to your running back and running the ball. It's impossible. And we've seen it in the playoffs the last two seasons. The Bengals game and the Ravens game. We even saw it in the Chiefs game in the AFC Championship. Like, I don't think they were going to win that game anyway if Derrick Henry, you know, would have had a better game, or if they didn't, or if they passed more. I don't think it would have mattered because Mahomes was fantastic and was pretty dead set on getting to the Super Bowl. But him and the running game and the reliance on a failing running game was the reason that they lost both of the last two playoff games. And yeah, Tannehill had a big part to play in the Bengals game for sure. He threw a lot of interceptions that some of them he shouldn't have thrown at all, and it was a big reason for it. But another reason was that the running game was terrible. The Bengals sold out to stop the run. They were able to do it, and then the offense was just completely disjointed from there. The same thing happened in this game, and Tannehill played great. He was awesome. I mean, he averaged 8.6 yards per attempt. He's having one of the best seasons of his career. It's crazy. It's like gone to underrated somehow. He's not at the level of 2019-2020 Ryan Tannehill, but if he keeps this up from the last 2 weeks, I mean, last week he averaged over 12 yards per attempt. This week, 8.6. If he keeps this up, he might near those same type of numbers, not touchdown numbers, and maybe not passing yards numbers, but in terms of the underlying metrics, like, he might be right there, and he might be playing in that level, but he needs the opportunity to to throw the ball more, because that seems to be the best way to move the ball for the Titans right now. Unfortunately, it's just the philosophy is give the ball to Derrick Henry, and I get it. I do get it because he's been the best running back in the league for a really long time, and I still think he can be with a better run-blocking offensive line. But this offensive line just isn't giving you that option, and the Titans need to adjust and change their ways according to that, because if they don't, they're going home in the first round of the playoffs, and I have no doubt about it, honestly. Like, this might be a stop the nonsense in the future, what I'm saying right now, but it just feels like that's the way it's heading, given the signs that we're getting. Putting a bow on that, and I want to talk a little bit about I kind of set at Vrabel for a lot of things in this game, but one of the things that bothered me the most was the field goal attempt late. I don't know if it would have mattered. Maybe the Bengals would have gone down the field if we had scored a touchdown. Just to give context, the Titans were down 20-13. They go down the field. They get to 4th and 5 at the Cincinnati 20 with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Vrabel decides to kick the field goal instead of going for it. And on the ensuing drive, the Bengals just don't give up the ball. They go on a 12-play, 66-yard drive, and the game ends, and that's it. I thought they should have gone for it because the defense, the last two drives, was not able to stop the Bengals in terms of through the passing game with T. Higgins and also Burrow on some of these scrambles. And P. Ryan was also breaking a lot of tackles towards the end of this game. So I thought they should have gone for it. It ends up biting them in the butt, and they don't even get the ball back with a chance to do anything. So what do you think? I got upset about that, especially for a coach who always acts like he's aggressive, and usually he goes for it in the right situations. So I don't want to, like, bag on him too much. There are actual analytics that Mike Vrabel is one of the best coaches in terms of going for it when he actually has to go for it, in terms of what the analytics say. So I don't want to bag on him too much for it, but I thought this was a clear situation where he should have gone for it. What do you think?
So I've kind of done a 180 on this, because, and part of this may be my brain just trying to, like, seek out answers and figure out what, you know, problem solve. But what, again, as with all things with Mike Vrabel, there's probably 50% of it is planned and 50% of it is us giving him too much credit. But what if his thinking was, okay, we're down by a touchdown. If we kick this field goal and make it, we'll be up by 4. And there's a world where Cincinnati is okay settling for a field goal, so we would get the ball back and be able to win with 8 points with a touchdown and a 2-point conversion. Because if they go for it and make it, right, and they, in the Titans score, and they go up, what would it be, 23-20 at that point, then, it'd be 20, no.
No, it was 20-13. They would have tied the game with a touchdown.
Yeah, okay, that's, yeah, so they would have tied it. So then, there's no chance with what we saw from that defense that they were going to go down the field and not be able to kick a field goal. Like, their kicker just has too much range. Like, he was, like, we were just, there was no juice to the pass rush. You know, like, it didn't look like it looked like we'd run out of gas. So what if his thinking was, if we tie it here, they're going to eat up the clock and kick a field goal. But if we kick a field goal and are only down by 4 points and can make them settle for a field goal to go up by 7, then we can go down the field and score a touchdown and a 2-point conversion with no time on the clock and win the game. Again, I don't
think that's what Mike Vrabel... There's no way.
Well, it's like, I don't think that's what Mike Vrabel's thinking, but at the same time, I'm like, so let's say they score a touchdown there and tie it up. Do you think with how the Titans played, I mean, they needed to get a stop and knew that the Bengals were going to try to run the ball a lot. And even then, they forced them to kick a field goal from, like, the 10-yard line or whatever. I mean, like, they were right on the doorstep anyway, and they didn't have to kick the field goal because the Titans hit the long snapper and it didn't count, and they got the win that way. But, I mean, if they'd got – I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like the Titans were going to stop them either way. So, I mean, the only way they were going to win that game is if they'd gotten the ball back and knowing how that last drive went, like with the Bengals, the only way conceivably they could have won that game is if the defense hadn't lined up and, you know, hit the long snapper, and then the Titans got the ball back and Tannehill does what he did right before the half, and he goes all the way down the field, scores a touchdown, and then gets a 2-point. Because I don't know, there was never a time in that game where I felt like the Titans were playing better than the Bengals in any phase except for the punting game. Everything else seemed like the Bengals were much more confident, you know, less stress on their offensive line, you know, less stress on their defense to stop the Titans. They had a good game plan, less, you know, it, you know, their running game felt like they could, you know, when they needed it, they could pull it out to get 5 yards. So it never felt like the Titans had any sort of momentum against the Bengals. And it didn't help that they kept having to settle for field goal attempts when they were in the red zone. So I don't know, like that was a frustrating call, and the lack of aggression from Mike Vrabel all day was aggravating. But I don't know, like this just felt like a game from the second they settled for that first field goal, that it was just going to be the Titans are going to have some lucky break or get a turnover, which they didn't do, or it was just going to be kind of what it was.
Yeah, frustrating loss. Not a crusher, just because, you know, the Bengals are a good team. So this isn't like they lost to the 1-9-1 Texans, you know. So I don't feel too terrible about it, but I wish they were better. And I think they have the talent to be better, but unfortunately it's not happening right now. And look, I'm not going to blame the coaching staff for everything. I thought they got outplayed too. Some of the times players just got outplayed. Like McCreary got by T. Higgins a good amount. T. Higgins is an amazing player. Joe Burrow made a lot of plays with his legs, and he looked like, you know, top five quarterback Joe Burrow. So I don't feel bad losing to that type of team. But at home, trying to measure up against one of the AFC's best, I mean, that's a game you should win, plain and simple. If you want to be a Super Bowl contender, that's the type of team that you should beat, especially at home, especially in a revenge game, by the way, which they said it wasn't a revenge game. The Bengals played like it was a revenge game. They came out. They were breaking tackles. They were running angry. They were hitting Derrick Henry hard on every play. And the Titans looked kind of soft at times, man, and I don't like that type of effort that we got from them. But hopefully it's just a blip in the radar, and, you know, it's one of those regular season lulls type of thing. The problem is, well, there is no problem because the division is so bad that it doesn't even matter. But it would be nice for them to keep a higher seed intact and in play. And they're still in it. They're still in it. The team above them right now is the Dolphins, and they're just one game above them. So it's not the end of the world. But it does get a little bit difficult with the Philadelphia Eagles being next on the schedule, which we're going to talk about right after this ad break.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome back into No Nonsense, the Tennessee Titans podcast. Now with the Bengals game in the rearview mirror, the Titans have another really difficult game coming up in the Philadelphia Eagles, who after a two-week stretch where they really didn't look good, they played really bad against the Colts and they lost to the Commanders, I think it was. Yeah, it was Washington.
Yeah,
they came back this week on Sunday Night Football, destroyed the Packers. They did give up a lot of points, and their defense has been a little bit hit or miss lately. We'll see if Jordan Davis plays in this game. He's been a huge part of their run defense, and it's a reason they've been getting run on a lot as of late, so I'm not sure if he's going to be back. But regardless, it seems like the Eagles finally got back on track on offense, although the Packers' defense can put anyone on track, really. They are a terrible unit, but the Eagles are clearly one of the best teams in the league. I think they actually have the best record in the league, period. Jalen Hurts is playing at an MVP type of level. They have a really good running game. What do you think about this game? It being on the road makes me a little more... Actually, I don't know. The Titans, it seems like home field doesn't matter for the Titans, right? Like, they lose a lot of games at home that they probably shouldn't lose, and they win games on the road that they probably shouldn't win. So they're kind of a random inverse type of team where the home field advantage just isn't really there for them. At least that's the type of vibe I get. I don't go to the games. You go to the games. So you could probably speak more on this. But you think facing the Eagles on the road instead of facing them at home matters at all?
No. I think that the Titans have some sort of home field advantage when they're playing against an offense that's real pass heavy and not, might have some a newer quarterback or offensive line that's an offensive line that's inexperienced or whatever. But sorry if you can hear my dog, but the Eagles are not that. The Eagles are when in doubt, Jalen Hurts just going to tuck it and run. And that's a good thing to do. He likes to get on the edge. He likes to, he's very fast and they spread you out. So it's, very difficult to cover that. And being very loud is cool, but Lane Johnson false starts every single play. It's sort of Hopkins's push off. His get off, he always moves before the ball's snapped, and then he does it consistently, so refs don't really care. So he's never going to get called for a false start. And then the rest of their whole offensive line is great. So they can go in silent count, whatever, but they're at home, so they won't have to, obviously. But that the question of would home field advantage matter? Probably not. So you also said, the road games don't seem to have that sort of effect. It's weird. The Titans, you think about how they played with Malik Willis in Kansas City. Everybody but, Malik Willis and the receivers were really, playing their best on the road, and they were clearly at a disadvantage in that environment, and the fact that the Chiefs had an extra week off to prepare and all that. So you know, like they do seem to thrive well in these challenging situations as long as things don't get away from them again, like the Buffalo game did. So I don't know. Like talking about the game in general, I'm curious to see, because I didn't think Philadelphia looked good at all the last 2 weeks. Like, they've looked functional on offense, but like Hurts had to have like 300 yards rush, like, or not him alone. They had 350 yards rushing, but he had a ton of yards rushing. And, you know, that when you can do that consistently and a defense doesn't seem to have a plan for you, that's going to, you know, like Lamar won an MVP off of that. Like, if you can tuck it and run and get upfield and you don't worry about your quarterback getting hurt, which, I mean, Hurts got hit like a lot. Like, I mean, there was a bunch of weird, like, you know, one time it looked like he might have hurt his back and he got up slow. Another time he got hit like a little bit low and he kind of had like a mini limp after it and all that. And yeah, that's going to happen when you're getting tackled by 300-pound dudes. But, you know, they didn't seem to care at all. And Sirianni doesn't seem to have any concern about that. So, I mean, it's going to be an aggressive offense. They're going to run the ball. They're going to go for it on fourth downs. I mean, it's almost exactly like playing the Ravens all those years ago when they were the one seed, except instead of three really good tight ends, they have two really good receivers. And so, I mean, it's going to be difficult. It's at this point, it's not going to be anything that Vrabel hasn't seen with the Titans, because they've just played so many different teams at this point and so many different styles. But it's going to be an aggravating matchup where they're going to have to score points. Like, they can't try to play their style of football, because trying to keep it to a 2017 game, because you saw that happen with the Colts, is not going to work for the Titans, because typically that's not the game that the Eagles play. But I'm sure that that's what the Titans will try to do. And, you know, they'll try to run it up the middle, and they'll try, because there's this weird, I need to look up why they're doing it. But for the past, ever since Washington, there's this weird, like, tight end trap that teams have run against the Eagles. And I don't know if they just don't defend it well, or if it isolates one of their linebackers and that guy can't make tackles or what, but Washington did it like 8 to 10 times. Like, that, they did it over and over again. And I saw it some in the Packers game too. And I wonder if there's some schematic thing that they're exploiting or what, but teams believe they can run it up the middle on the Eagles, and they've been right. So, I mean, even adding Ndamukong Suh and Linval Joseph, the only reason the Packers slowed down at all was because they passed the ball. The running game and the little swing passes to the running backs, like, that, I mean, they were killing the Eagles. And the 33 points is not an illusion. Like, even when Love went in there, they could still move the ball pretty much with ease. So that is a viable strategy. But again, you've got to be creative, and you've got to do it the way you've got to add in plays like what those two teams have done, and what Washington, Indianapolis, and Green Bay have done. And I don't know if Todd Downing would look at another team and say, this is something that worked, I'm going to incorporate that. And so that makes me naturally hesitant to say that the Titans are going to find any sort of way to move the ball effectively unless they lean more on the passing game.
Yeah, the Eagles have, well, in terms of the running game, run defense, obviously Jordan Davis being out has been a pretty big factor in all this. It's crazy how bad they've been since he got injured. Granted, like you said, they signed Sue and Joseph, but I don't think they're the talent level at this point in their careers that Jordan Davis is and has played at this season. So hopefully he's not going to play in this game. I think that'll make things a little bit easier for the Titans, especially since they have to get their run game figured out. But I've also noticed that a lot receivers are like having really good games against the Eagles lately, even though they have good cornerbacks. Obviously they have Darius Slay, and their other cornerbacks aren't bad at all, although some of them have been, I feel like one of them gets injured every week, and they have to start another one. So maybe that's an issue there. But, I mean, against Washington, Terry McLaurin had a really big game. Against the Colts, Pittman and Paris Campbell had good games. And in this game against the Packers, Christian Watson, once again, went deep, got open down the field. So I think there's success to be had against this defense. Like, I don't think it's the same type of elite defense that we thought they were earlier in the season. I think the Titans offense could theoretically have success if they wanted to, and if they run block even somewhat well. If they don't, we're going to get the same type of performances that we've gotten the past couple of weeks. But in terms of the passing offense, I think Tannehill could keep the mojo going. I think Treylon Burks is going to have opportunities to make plays. Big game for him, too, coming up against the player that, you know, he's quote-unquote replacing. And let's talk a little bit about A.J. Brown, because we haven't mentioned it yet, but this is the revenge game. This is the one he's had circled on his calendar all season. I think Titans fans have also had this one circled on their calendars, because obviously we want to beat A.J. Brown, especially after he keeps tweeting about the Titans for no reason. And ever since he tweeted about them, he's been absolutely terrible, even though he caught a touchdown in this past game. But he also fumbled the ball and lost it. So what do you think? Do you think A.J. Brown is going to wake up from this little poor spell that he's had and get up for this game and take it to the Titans? Or do you think the Titans can frustrate him with different things? And do you think the Titans are going to pay special attention to him? Or do you think that's not really a consideration for them?
I mean, AJ is going to be as good as his attention span allows. Like, just like every, you know, if he remembers to hold the ball tight, if he remembers to catch the ball, like, he's great. I mean, like, he's awesome. Like, they've got plenty of volume in their offense, but the problem is his attention span is so short. Like, I mean, part of that's great because if you drop a pass, you can catch the next one. But some of it is he just is constantly trying to run before he has the ball. You know, just small, dumb decisions that he makes all the time. And that's why, you know, the past 2 weeks he's had those fumbles where, you know, the Colts game, he had a fumble, and I don't remember if it led to a scoring drive or it led to a score directly. And then it was the same thing against the Packers where I think got returned to, like, the 10-yard line or something. I mean, like, it basically flipped the field completely and really helped energize the Packers and help them. I don't know if it was 20-0 at that point or if it was 14-0 and that, but it was somewhere along the Packers comeback that really helped even the momentum out, because at the beginning of the game it felt like it was all Eagles, like there was just nothing the Packers were going to do. And then, you know, fast forward and you see that it's a 7-point game and it's 40-33, so something must have gone right, and really the fumble was the catalyst for that. So I don't think they're going to pay any special attention to AJ, because they don't really pay special, I mean, they paid special attention to Davante Adams, but I mean, AJ is not Davante Adams. Like, they'll probably, and really you can't pay that much attention to any one player in when you're playing the Eagles, because they like Smith as much or more as they like AJ. I mean, like, I don't know how the targets bear out and all that. I know AJ has more yards because he was getting force fed in the beginning of the year, but over the last 3 or 4 weeks, Smith is the more impressive player. So, I mean, again, some of that sounds like just AJ Brown slander and like bitter and all that. It's not. I mean, just go back and watch. Like, he looks smoother. Like, AJ's clearly got something going in his head right now. But I mean, that AJ's always been that kind of guy. So, you know, does that mean that he won't have 120 yards and 8 catches? No, I mean, we saw against the Colts just how spiteful Sirianni is as just a human. So he could very much bind to the, let's stick it to the guys who traded you, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, they can gaslight each other and pretend that's what happened and get pumped up and turn in that kind of performance. But it's also a game where, you know, if somebody got under AJ's skin, like, I mean, he could throw a punch and get ejected. I mean, he could lose his mind. Like, if this was in Nashville and he had two drops, he would be distraught on the sideline. I mean, like, he would be helmet across the field, like he like DK was, like when Fulton kind of got in his head and got at him like that. So I don't know what'll happen. You know, the Titans have not played well against receivers when the ball has been in the air. Like, they don't seem to have any desire to undercut things or do anything like that. They kind of want to just make the tackle on the spot. But, you know, if they wanted to get sort of in AJ's face and, you know, make him pay attention the whole time and all that, that they could make it hard for him. But I think Hurts is just smart enough to where he'd say, like, unless there was a mandate that this was a stick it to the Titans game, like, they could just go other directions and try different players. So I don't think there'll be any special attention for AJ. Like, I think he'll tweet something at some point, either before or after the, well, if they lose, he won't tweet anything, or he'll tweet something and delete it or whatever. But if they win, he'll absolutely tweet something and get people excited. But I mean, that's just who AJ is. Like, Kevin Byard kind of made fun of him at the press conference, and he was like, you know, he's always like, he's, you know, he's got something to say, and, you know, that's my dog and all that. But I mean, I would love to have the Titans players take a lie detector test and just see, like, how many of them are just glad they don't really have to deal with him anymore, because that he's kind of the only one who had that sort of like diva mentality or whatever. And like I said, that you should as a wide receiver, like, you've got to have some of that. So, but you listen to him and Taylor Lewan talk on the podcast a few years ago, or, you know, you listen to them talk about him, and it's like, he's always rubbed some people the wrong way.
Yeah. I mean, he's a very emotional player, and I think that has pros and cons. So we'll see if the pro side or the con side comes down this game. Like you said, like, if he starts dropping a couple of passes, we've seen that before, man. Like, if he gets even one drop in a game, he just checks out, man. And I don't know why that happens to him. It does happen to some receivers, but a lot of them have, like, short-term memories, and they just come back the next play, and, you know, they run their route, they catch the ball, and that's it, move along. A.J. Brown, for some reason, doesn't seem to be that type of person. So it's going to be important for the Titans to get in his head a little bit if they can. But also, like you said, they have a lot of weapons that they can attack you with, and even if we take A.J. Brown out of the game, the battle has not been won, because Devontae Smith is an up and coming star in this league. He could really beat you by himself, really, at times, and he plays a lot bigger than his frame suggests. And like you said, the Titans cornerbacks have not been very good in contested catch situations. So there's a game where Devontae Smith could potentially have an impact that way. I think, on paper, the matchup maybe lends itself well to the Titans, because the Eagles love to run the ball so much, but they do it in so many different types of ways, with their quarterback, with their running backs. Sometimes they get the receivers involved as well. It's tough. It's going to be tough. I'm taking solace in the fact that they've played the Lamar Jackson Ravens very well in the past, and they've held them to pretty low point totals. So maybe it's a good sign, but I'm still a little bit scared, especially with Hurts playing so well through the air. Like, he has improved so much as a passer, and he's just so dynamic as a runner. If they're not running designed plays for him, he's going to kill us with scrambles, because, as we saw, like, every quarterback seems to be able to scramble against the Titans for whatever reason. Burrow did it a bunch of times in this last game. So hopefully the Titans have a good game plan in place. They're going to need it, because our offense just refuses to score more than 20, 24, 27 points at the most. 27, I think, is a season high for the Titans. And it's going to be tough to win against the Eagles if we don't put up points. So we'll see. We'll see what the Titans come up with. Hopefully they have a good showing. Is this a 1 p.m., 12 p.m. game? I actually don't.
It's noon, or it's noon my time, 1 year time.
Another one, huh? Second one in a row where I don't get it. I don't understand it at all. Maybe they have a better schedule this week. And actually, they were right to not put the Titans-Bengals game at noon, because, man, it was pretty boring. But this should be a fun one, I think. I think at least there's good storylines here. Two good teams. Titans coming off a loss. They should be wanting to win. And the Eagles with a win and one more loss, I think, can actually clinch the North. Is that the East? Is that correct? I don't know if it's a division or, then it, or a
no,
playoff.
No, it's just a playoff spot. Playoff. They have to win this week, and then there's like three other things that need to happen. Because them and the Vikings can both lock in their playoff spot, because they're the first two that can clinch, which I believe this is a Mike Herndon tweet. If it's not, somebody tweet at me and tell me I'm wrong, but I think Mike Herndon said that the Titans magic number against the Colts is 3 and against the Jaguars is 4. So once some combination happens of the Titans getting 3 wins or the Colts getting 3 more losses, or the Titans getting 4 wins and the Jaguars getting 4 more losses, like once a combination of both of those things happen, then the Titans, because the Titans could be locked in after next week if they win this week and win against the Jaguars, and if the Jaguars lose and then lose next week, I believe, and the Colts would have to lose somewhere in there. Doesn't really matter, but it is interesting that we're at that time of the year now, because, you know, how many, like, even going back to the early John Robinson days when the Titans were 9-7 a lot, like, how many times has it been the, you know, week 16 back then or week 17 now, where the Titans are like, okay, all we have to do is not lose, or all we have to do is win, or if we lose, these other teams have to lose, and then we'll make the playoffs. Like, now it's like, okay, if you win in 2 weeks, are you going to rest some players? Or, you know, it's good to have those sort of problems, but it also kind of reminds you of what tier of the league you are and just how bad the rest of the AFC South is.
Yeah, it's crazy that they're that close. It's incredible. But yeah, the AFC South is really bad, and there's a lot of bad teams in the league this season. I mean, the fact that the Eagles could clinch a playoff spot also very soon. I'm surprised they haven't yet, given the state of the NFC. I mean, have you seen the Bucs? Have you seen the Buccaneers?
Yeah, the whole NFC South is just below 500. It's also disgusting. The AFC's not much better, because I believe now, I mean, part of this is just the team and not the actual, like, record, but the Jets are in the lead for the AFC East, right? Like, they're like the Jets.
No, Dolphins.
Oh, or the Dolphins. Okay, and then the Jets had the 5 seed.
Yeah, I think they have the 6 the seed, because seeds. The Bills have 5. Jets have 7.
So they're all 3.
The Jets or Bengals have 6 or 7. I think those are the 6 and 7 teams. But yeah, I mean, if you look at the rest of the AFC, like, it's terrible. The Browns are 4-7.
The Jets are on their third quarterback. I mean, the Jets, the Jets have played Mike White, Joe Flacco, and Wilson. So it's like,
they finally found their best quarterback, by the way.
Yeah, they benched their young second overall pick quarterback and didn't miss a beat either time he was out. So it's just like, like, that, what a weird place to be in, where you have 3 interchangeable quarterbacks and you're still like 8-3 and or whatever, or 7-4, whatever they are. And it's just like, what a weird time for the NFL.
Yeah. So thankful that we play in the AFC South. I mean, I think we would handle our business in some of these other leagues. Shout out AFC West for absolutely sucking after everyone thought it was going to be the best division in NFL history.
Paper Meanwhile, Tigers.
Raiders or Broncos, 7 combined wins. Chargers are barely above 500. Oh, man. You love to see it. But, yeah, hopefully the Titans could get a win against the Eagles and make their lives easier. Although I think they're still going to, even once they clinch the division, I still think they're going to, they're not going to rest their starters, because they would like a better seed. Until they're locked into a seed, I don't think they're going to rest anyone. But better to get as many wins as possible, and hopefully this will be a good game to watch as well. We're going to take an ad break here, and we'll come back and wrap up with Stop the Nonsense. Welcome back into No Nonsense, a Tennessee Times podcast. Will, do you have a Stop the Nonsense for us?
I do. I touched on it earlier. I was going to go through, and Sports Illustrated put out a tweet that says Twitter erupted into major celebration after a U.S. men's national team's win over Iran, or however you want to say it. But if, like, my Stop the Nonsense is, I don't have a problem with being patriotic. That's cool. I don't have a problem if you like soccer. That's fine. If you're one of the, I would say, 5,000 people I've seen on my timeline who is commenting on, like, oh, this guy was wide open, why didn't he pass? And you use words like feed and touch and like all these like little like kind of soccer words that you know. And then I don't see you tweet about soccer for the majority of the other, you know, 3 years and 355 days of the year. Just say go USA. Like, it bugs me when people, and this is just a personal pet peeve, I guess, but it bugs me when people act like they have like a level of fandom that they don't. It's sort of like stolen valor, but like for fandoms. Like, I have a similar gripe with some people who talk about the Vols and who I'll ask, like, you know, what do you think about the game on Saturday? And they'll say, oh, like, I didn't watch it, I was out of town. But when the Vols are playing Georgia, they're commenting on, you know, where the ball should be thrown and all this kind of stuff. Like, I don't know. That something about that rubs me the wrong way. So if you're one of those people, please stop and just say go USA and use the hashtag or whatever. But don't feel the need to become a coach for 12 minutes and then hang up your cleats for another 4 years. That is irritating to me.
Feels like a subtweet towards me, but I'm not going to, just kidding. No, I'm tweeting exactly. About soccer, no, you're all the pro time.
Now I will say, and this is a different category, if you're somebody like me who every now and then will see Matthias tweet a lot about soccer and you just like quote tweet it and say like a clearly like fake take on soccer, do that forever. That's always funny to me. Like, just say, like, how you've constantly been saying, like, I think I tweeted the other day that I was telling my friends 8 years ago that this young French team was going to be great in 8 years.
Yeah.
Obviously lying, but, like, that is different. Like, if you have a funny take or if you have something like that, by all means, shoot that shot, but otherwise.
Yeah, also, please, no tweets about, you know, imagine if we had LeBron James playing soccer. Can we not?
Those are so funny.
Can we not do that? Please. I'm begging, like, you guys. Begging
we've all talked about it, and it might have been one of our Stop the Nonsense before, but when they had Iron Man on the poster and like all those like imaginary characters, and they're like, we're all behind you. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yeah. Oh, man. Sometimes the U.S. fan base, so. Yeah, they're in the World Cup. Anyway, I also have – my Stop the Nonsense is also about the World Cup, and it's mostly about the press surrounding it. So I don't know if you saw this, but one of the U.S. players actually the other day at a press conference, I think it was yesterday, an Iranian reporter, first of all, is asking Tyler Adams, the captain of the U.S. men's national team – before he even asked him a question, he like chastises him for saying Iran instead of Iran, which I get it. Like, I would maybe be upset if someone mispronounces my country's name. Actually, not really. I think it's kind of ridiculous, but whatever. Tyler Adams had a really good response to that. But then after that, he just started asking him about like the socio-political issues and background that comes with this game, and I'm just like, dude, he's just playing soccer. He's here to represent his national team. He just wants to win the World Cup. He's not here to support a cause and fight a non-existent war between USA and Iran. Like, it has nothing to do with him. he doesn't have, he's not a politician. He is a soccer player, and he's just there to play, man. And super, super annoying question. He handled it really well, so shout out to him. And it didn't stop there, because in another press conference for the Belgium national team, there was an Egyptian journalist who was asking Eden Hazard, who plays on the Belgium national team, a question. And he was like, I've noticed that you've gained weight. Have you noticed this yourself? And Eden Hazard was like, no, I haven't noticed this. Like, what is he supposed to say? Yes, I'm fat now. I'm fatter than I was 4 years ago. Just ridiculous. And then he asked him for a selfie, and then Hazard denied him the selfie request. Man, just come on. Can we cover the biggest tournament in soccer with a little bit more objectivity and a little bit more nuance, please? That's all I'm asking for.
Both of those things are so funny, because that, so sometimes I'll hear and this is rare, I'll hear soccer interview questions, and it sounds almost like some of the questions that get asked at the Super Bowl, where it's just like completely off the wall nonsense questions. And it makes me feel
very
good
similar
to hear, like,
very similar, yeah, because like, it's you, reporters like, that like,
because I did see that.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, no, you're like, but like you were going to say, it's like the reporters that just don't get access to these people. And so they're like, I'm just going to like, what can I ask somebody from the US? And it's like, that's not really like their jurisdiction. It's like, but the range of can you explain why your military is here, or did you eat too much over the last like 2 weeks? Like, it's such a, like, the importance of those questions is such a weird, like, vacillation. And I would argue that the weight one was even more appropriate than the other one, which is, it's funny and also insane. And that is the one part I do love, is just how absurd it is to hear some of those questions.
I would love to hear Mike Vrabel get one of these questions. It would just be, just to hear his response, that would be amazing. But yeah, I mean, we're almost at the point where someone's going to ask, like, who would you screw, marry, or kill, Messi, Maradona, or Pelé? Like, we're very close to one of those types of questions coming. And I can't wait for it to happen. But ridiculous. Anyway, that's going to do it for us for this week. We'll be back next week to recap the game against the Eagles and preview the game against the
Jaguars, right?
Jaguars. Is that true? Yeah, Jaguars. And then they play the Chargers. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So that'll do it for us. Thank you for tuning in, as always. And remember to stop the nonsense.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error. Get the athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.